Very pleased to welcome our first guest. Who else but Stephen Brunt?
Good morning, Stephen. We were mentioning we're out. We're at Cowboys Casino / Nightclub. Today is our excellent adventure. It's basically like a amazing race with a little bit of debauchery involved and some things that, you know, Warner put it together, so I don't know that I need to say much more.
So it starts there at 7 in the morning and ends where?
It ends back here.
Saturday at 7 in the morning.
It's teams of 8. All the money goes to kids' sport. They bought their teams. Everybody gets their own vehicle, and then they have to go and do numerous things that we've set up throughout the city of Calgary.
Okay. So it's not just, you don't just sit in the bar for 24 hours. That's not the excellent adventure.
No. You
okay, good.
You got to get out and accomplish something.
Yeah. That's good. You have to see the little daylight. That's excellent. I'm just trying to imagine what that bar looks and it's a, you know, quite a famous bar for anybody. Anybody's ever been to Calgary, but what it looks like at 7 in the morning, because I would think most people have not seen it at 7 in the morning.
No, it's very clean.
It's clean. It doesn't. There's no one curled up under tables or anything like.
No, which
is surprising. They got everybody out from last night.
Last night was 75-cent draft night for students, so it's surprising that they got them all out of here.
It's nice that they're supporting education in all its forms.
That's right. That said, we haven't been upstairs, so there could be some deadbeat on top of a mechanical bull or something half asleep. We don't know.
There's a few of the workers look a little bit like haggard and ready to be out, like wondering, like, why did I get this shift? I am hurting.
Okay. What's legal opening time in Calgary? At what time do they?
We don't care about that, Steve. It's not important. Why are you asking these questions?
Jeez. What are all these rules?
Just, you know, it's important. I need to know this stuff. I did a remote for years in Montreal at a bar in Montreal, and I would go. I actually went down for it, and it was on St. Patrick's Day. And they would, but it was an afternoon drive show, so it had a slightly different vibe to it. And it just, and then things just kind of continued. So that's, I have some slightly fuzzy memories of doing that. Sadly, it's not, I don't have that gig anymore, but it was, but we were never there at 7 a.m. unless, you know, unless somebody had looped the clock. Yeah.
Second lap.
Hey, it can happen.
We were
talking earlier about the Blue Jays, another arm on the DL, but yet the team is finding a way to play its best baseball, albeit, I mean, it's brief and it's not saying a whole lot, but its best baseball of the season is being played here in the last week to 10 days.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain. I wish John Gibbons, Mark Shapiro, you know, everybody would love to be able to say this is why it's happening right now and why it didn't happen at the beginning of April with, you know, most hands on deck, not necessarily all hands on deck, but they've got another starter down. Now they're going to get Aaron Sanchez back this weekend, so that's a good one. And Joe Biagini in the rotation looked very good. You know, in a limited exposure, his first time out, he threw 40-something pitches, but he'll be stretched out a bit now, and that's probably, you know, not just the present. That probably is a little look into the future, the 2018 Toronto Blue Jays. I assume that's where he'll be. But it's not just that. You know, no Russell Martin, no Josh Donaldson still, no Troy Tulowitzki, no Kendrys Morales. You know, so that would be your, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 hitters in the lineup? So 3, 4, 5, 6 hitters and 3 starters down. Not a lot of teams are going to survive that, and yet they've been getting production out of other people. You know, offensively, this team has struggled offensively, suddenly scoring runs on the shoulders of guys like Ryan Goins. And you know, last night Smoke had a big night, obviously. But yeah, it is inexplicable. Now they're picking on a Seattle team right now that's lost 4 starters of their 5, so they've got it almost worse. But, you know, they're at home. There's a little bit of a window in their schedule here now. Not that Seattle's a really good team, but, again, really hurting on the pitching side. Then they've got 4 with Atlanta, who are not a good team. And they've won 8 out of 12 now, and you're starting to creep up a little bit closer to .500. And it's – so, you know, the kind of abandon all hope, white flag, let's tear this thing down vibe that would have been there a week ago has been mitigated a little bit. And, you know, people are looking and saying, well, you know, 2 years ago this team was 51-51, and they made the postseason, made it to the ALCS. So if they can get, you know, I don't know, pick your number, but if by the end of the May they're 4 games under .500, if by the All-Star break they're at .500, you know, you've still got a shot, even though, you know, Baltimore's playing crazy well and the Yankees look really good, and, you know, presumably Boston's going to wake up at some point, and there's other teams playing well in the American League. But, you know, if presumably everybody's going to get healthy at some point, and, you know, if at that point they're not completely, totally out of it, who knows? But it's been fun to watch. These last two games have been as much fun as any two games this season, just because they kind of bucked expectations.
It's Triple-A baseball, Steve. You got to love it. It's the Rainiers against the Bisons. That's why it's
so
exciting.
Except
these guys
want to get to the bigs. Except that Seattle, the position player lineup is not Tacoma, right? They've still got some guys that can hit in there. They still got most of their hitters. But you're right, like, the pitching is unbelievable, the way they've been decimated in their starting rotation. But, you know, sometimes teams do compensate. We see it in all sports, right? For over a short stretch, teams can compensate for the loss of stars and play really well. You know, and sometimes to the point where people say, boy, you don't really need that other guy because this guy who's filling in for him is just as good. Well, you know, generally if you let things play out, everything kind of, things go back to normal and you understand that, you know, a utility player is a utility player and a fourth line player is not a first line player. But you teams can kind of compensate, and that's a bit of what's happening here. Plus, maybe they just weren't as bad as they looked, you know, for most of April. And there's a reason why just about everybody said this is a team that's going to contend to be in the postseason this year, because they were a good team on paper that played really bad, and now maybe they're a team that's on paper is diminished, but you know they're not as bad as we thought they were.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I'll say this, like the area that probably deserves some credit, that bullpen was getting beat up pretty bad week and a half, 2 weeks ago by the media, and rightfully so, but they've been pretty clean since, and that's with Biagini getting moved out of there to be a starter. I didn't expect that.
Well, you know, I think what you've had in the last little while are some guys who have kind of been kicked, you know, kind of up and down and up and down guys. Ryan Tepera, Danny Barnes, you've got Leone, the guy they brought in this year, one of their signings in the offseason. You know, some of those guys, you know, who have live arms but never could quite establish themselves in the major leagues and lost their jobs. You know, other people took those roles. And also Joe Smith, who, you know, they brought in the offseason as one of their signings, who's been really, really good, kind of stepping into that setup role because Jason Grilli has not been good. But, you know, Tepera's a guy who, you know, he is a guy that throws mid-90s, you know, 96, 97 sometimes. He's got a really good live arm, and, you know, one of those guys who didn't quite trust his stuff, was always worried about being sent down, you know, and now he knows he's got a job because there are other people who are not around, and those are the guys who have stepped up. You know, not so much last night because Estrada was solid and gave him six, but, you know, the night before when Liriano blew up, you know, that's a game they should lose. Right. If you look at kind of who they're playing, what they've got offensively, you got a bullpen that had been used up the night before, and yet Liriano doesn't get an out in the third inning, and they come back and win that game.
21 outs. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of stuff has been, you know, sort of like all the things that went wrong in the first month. Some of those things are going right unexpectedly. So where does this thing settle? I guess that's the question. You know, when we're into June and heading towards July, when you can actually make a judgment on what a team is going to do in a baseball season, where do we settle? Do they settle six games under 500, which would be, you know, you're not going to win and you better start making some decisions? Or are they 500 or slightly better when you think, boy, maybe you want to augment this team and take a shot one more time with this group? It's a tricky one for management. You know, I'm not saying that they would rather be out of it and just be able to make decisions, because no one wants to be out of it. But right now they're kind of caught in a very gray area about how you should approach this roster and manage this roster heading towards the trade deadline.
Well, I was going to ask you, Jonah Carey on Sportsnet.ca has written a story, or at least an article, on the case against trading Josh Donaldson this season. That's obviously one of the things you're talking about. I think we talk about it with sports. We react so heavily, it's like so quickly, to what's happening in the moment. It's hard to be patient and to take that macro kind of look. What do you see, or what do you anticipate is the right thing to do with Josh Donaldson?
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but it depends. You know, it depends where you are. You know, Josh Donaldson is at a stage, you know, he is ARB eligible for one more year. He will have an arbitration. But in arbitration next year, he's going to make $20 million or more. So you've got one more year of control, but it's going to be a very expensive year of control. And you've got a lot of money committed to, you know, to Tulowitzki. You've got a lot of money committed to Martin. You've got a lot of money committed to guys in their 30s. So do you want to, you know, have $75 million committed to three guys in their, you know, who are in their mid-30s when you've already acknowledged that an aging roster is a problem? That said, you know, you're not going to, unless you get an unbelievable return for Josh Donaldson, which you might with that extra year of control, you know, could you get a franchise-altering group of prospects in return for him? Because that's what it would take. It's different than, you know, let's say they're essentially out of it as we head into June, into July. Liriano is a free agent at the end of the year. You're going to trade him. Estrada is a free agent at the end of the year. Even if you want him back, you might trade him and then try and sign him back as a free agent. You know, you've got some guys, Bautista, you know, if there's any sign of life there, you're only committed to him for 1 year. So those guys are the first guys you talk about. And, you know, again, and their value is going to be less because, you know, it's a rental. But, you know, the Donaldson decision is a different one. And it also, and this is where it gets really complicated because, you know, this team is owned by a media company. You know, we have 162 games of Blue Jays baseball on TV. They own the stadium. They want to put a product on the field and put a product on television that is going to keep this audience, which has grown enormous in the last couple of years, you know, at least keep it entertained. So do you trade away your best player? And, you know, see, that's why I don't think we're going to see a complete kind of tear it down to the foundation here, because it doesn't make sense. And, you know, you also have an ownership with resources that this is, you know, this is not a small market. So do you try and spend some money in the offseason and try and be competitive next year? And if you're going to do that, you might as well keep Josh Donaldson. So there are a lot of other factors here other than, you know, kind of straightforward, tear down or not to tear down. You know, Mark Shapiro went through this in Cleveland, but he was working in a small market for a small market owner. You know, he had to lop money off that payroll. That's not necessarily the case, and it's not necessarily a good idea with this owner, you know, at this time in the evolution of the Blue Jays. So, yeah, if it was a straight baseball decision, it would be one thing, but I don't think it's a straight baseball decision.
Before we move away from baseball, you went and had an opportunity to visit with Marco Estrada, one of your ventures away from the city of Toronto. Tell us about that, because it's coming up, right?
Yeah, it's going to run after the game on Sunday, so whatever time that game ends, you know, approximately 2 p.m. your time, but, you know, if you're setting your PVR, give it a little bit of wiggle room, because baseball's like that. Yeah, Marco Estrada story, so it's a Mother's Day, perfect on Mother's Day. It's about him and his mom, Marissa, who brought him over from Mexico when she was a single mother. Marco was 5. You know, they were fleeing a bad situation in Obregon, Mexico. You know, we talked to a lot about the cartel when we were talking about Osuna last year, but, you know, similar thing. They were kind of wound up at being a, you know, ground zero in the drug wars in Mexico. And came to the United States. You know, she had a passport, but she did not have work papers, so she was technically an illegal immigrant, and set up in Sylmar, California, in the San Fernando Valley suburbs of L.A. with her sister and her brother-in-law, who kind of helped them out. Sylmar is a tough place, man. It's probably just about as tough as where they were in Mexico in terms of gangs and drugs. But they made a life there, and they are an incredible team, the two of them. And, you know, Marco is one of those guys. He's not the guy most likely to succeed on any level. You know, he came from a poor background. He came from a tough place. And he is not the most athletic. He wasn't the most athletically gifted guy in his high school. You know, he didn't start for his high school team until his senior year. And that was only after somebody got hurt. So, you know, he was never anybody's blue chip prospect. And the fact that he has made it to where he is in the major leagues, you know, not a guy who ever threw 95, you know, not a guy who, not like Aaron Sanchez, where everybody knew he was going to be a first-round draft pick. This is a guy who it's a real underdog story, and, you know, the first thing he did when he made a little bit of money was he looked after his mom. So, they're great folks, and he's a very modest guy. You know, when this thing is airing on Sunday, he's going to be hiding somewhere. You know, it's also Marco Estrada bobblehead day at the Rogers Center. And he is, because of the kind of guy he is, he's the most self-effacing professional athlete I think I've ever met. I don't think he'll show his face on Sunday anywhere because of this show and because of the bobblehead.
Well, anytime you do anything, it's very good. So we look forward to seeing that coming up. Kind of out of time, I guess. Now, Pinder is actually taking part in our adventure today.
Yes.
And we're very concerned because he's very susceptible to peer pressure and...
Good teammate.
A degenerate, is what we're saying.
Thirsty always.
We're just worried about him, you know, getting off, just completely falling off the rails.
Remember what your mom said, you know, if that kid down the street jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge? Remember, that's how peer pressure works, right?
He was the one that jumped off the bridge.
Yeah, I am that kid.
He's already at the bottom.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I have no useful advice.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, buddy.
See you, boys.